Chapter 2 Sankhya Yoga. Sanjaya said to him who was thus overcome by pity and whose eyes were filled with tears, downcast and despairing, Madhusudana spoke these words. The holy Lord said, whence has come this faint-heartedness of yours in the time of danger? Ignoble, not leading to heaven, but to disgrace, O Arjuna. At no time should you entertain such cowardice, unsuitable. Abandon this faint-heartedness and stand up, O scorcher of foes. Arjuna said, but how can I in battle fight with arrows, Madhusudana, against Bhishma and Drona too, who are worthy of reverence? Better that I eat the food of beggary instead of my slaying these great-souled gurus. If I kill them, my enjoyments in this world of wealth and desires will all be stained with blood. Indeed, I cannot tell which will be better, that we should conquer them or they conquer us. The sons of Dhritarashtra stand facing us, after whose slaying we would not wish to live. Weakness and pity overcome my being. With mind in confusion, I supplicate you. Oh, say decidedly, what is my duty? I am your disciple. Do you direct me? I see nothing that can remove this sorrow that dries up my senses. Though I should attain the unrivaled and prosperous dominion over the earth and mastery over the gods. Sanjaya said, having said this to Govinda, Arjuna, scorcher of his foes, then further said, I shall not fight, and fell into a silence deep. To him who thus was despondent in the midst of the two armies, O Bharata, as though smiling, Hrishikesha then spoke these words. The holy Lord said, you have been mourning for those who should not be mourned for, though you speak words of wisdom, for the wise grieve not for the living or the dead. Truly there never was a time when I was not, nor you nor these lords of men, nor in the future a time when we shall cease to be. As to the embodied childhood, youth, and old age arise in turn, so he gets another body. The wise are not confused by this. Truly, material contacts produce cold, heat, pleasure, and pain. Impermanent, they come and go. Learn to endure them, Bharata. He whom these things do not afflict, the same in pain or in pleasure, that wise one, O leader of men, is fit for immortality. The unreal never comes to be, the real does never cease to be. The certainty of both of these is known to those who see the truth. That by which all is pervaded, no, that is indestructible. There is none with the power to destroy the imperishable. These bodies inhabited by the eternal embodied self are declared to come to an end. Therefore now fight, O Bharata. He who thinks the self is slayer, and he who thinks the self is slain, neither of the two understands. The self slays not, nor is it slain. Neither is the self slain, nor yet does it die, nor having been will it ever come not to be. Birthless, eternal, perpetual, primeval, it is not slain whenever the body is slain. In what way can he who knows this, indestructible, eternal, birthless, and imperishable, slay or cause another to slay? Even as a man casts off his worn-out clothes and then clothes himself in others which are new, so the embodied casts off worn-out bodies and then enters into others which are new. This self by weapons is cut not. This self by fire is burnt not. This self by water is wet not. and this self is by wind dried not. This self cannot be cut, nor burnt, nor wetted, nor dried. 'Tis changeless, all-pervading and unmoving, immovable, eternal self. Unmanifest, unthinkable, this self is called unchangeable. Therefore, knowing this to be such, you surely ought never to mourn. And if you think this self to have constant birth and death, even then, O mighty armed, you should not be impelled for this reason to grieve. Of that which is born, death is sure. Of that which is dead, birth is sure. Over the unavoidable, therefore, you never should lament. All beings are unmanifest in their beginning, Bharata, manifest in their middle state, unmanifest then in their end. Someone perceives this self as being wondrous, another speaks of it as being wondrous, another hears of it as being wondrous, and another hearing does not understand. This indweller in all bodies is ever indestructible, therefore you should not, Bharata, ever mourn for any creature. And looking at your own dharma, you surely ought never waver, for there is nothing better than a righteous war for kshatriyas. Fortunate are those kshatriyas who thus are called, O Arjuna, to fight in a battle like this that comes to them as heaven's gate. But if you refuse to engage in righteous warfare, Arjuna, then forfeiting your own dharma and honor, you shall incur sin. The world will also ever hold you as a craven reprobate. To the honored, such disrepute is surely worse even than death. The great car warriors will believe you shrink back from battle through fear, and you will be lightly esteemed by those who have thought much of you. Your enemies, now caviling at your great prowess, then will say of you things not to be uttered. What could be greater pain than this? By dying you attain heaven, conquering you enjoy the earth. Therefore, O son of Kunti, rise in strength of heart, resolve to fight. Make pain and pleasure, gain and loss, victory and defeat the same. Then engage now in this battle, this way you shall incur no sin. This Buddhi Yoga by Sankhya is now declared to you, so heed. Joining this insight to your will, you shall be rid of karma's bonds. In this no effort is wasted, nor are adverse results produced. Even a little of this dharma protects you from the greatest fear. There is a single resolute understanding here, Arjuna. The thoughts of the irresolute are many-branched, truly endless. They, the ignorant ones, proclaim their flowery speech, O Pritha's son, delighting in the Veda's words and saying, there is nothing else. Filled with desires intent on heaven, offering rebirth as action's fruit, addicted to so many rites, whose goal is enjoyment and power. Attached to pleasure and power, their minds are drawn away by this speech, and to them is not granted the insight from meditation. The Vedas deal with the gunas, free yourself from them and be free from the pairs of opposites and eternally fixed on the self. For the Brahman who knows the self, the Vedas are of no more use than a reservoir of water when there is a flood everywhere. Your right is to action alone, not to its fruits at any time. Never should they move you to act or be attached to inaction. Then being steadfast in yoga, without attachment, do actions heedless of success and failure. Evenness of mind is yoga. Actions inferior by far to yoga of intelligence, seek refuge in enlightenment, abhor action done from desire. joined to enlightenment, cast off in this world good and evil deeds. Therefore, to yoga, yoke yourself, for skill in action is yoga. Those whose minds are joined to wisdom, having abandoned action's fruit, are freed from bondage to rebirth and go to the place free from pain. When your intelligence crosses beyond illusion's confusion, then you shall be indifferent to the heard and the to be heard. When your intellect stands fixed in deep meditation, unmoving, disregarding Vedic doctrine, you'll attain self-realization. Arjuna said, "What Krishna is the description of the man of steady wisdom, steadfast in deep meditation? How does he speak or sit or walk?" The holy Lord said, "When he completely casts away all the desires of the mind, his self satisfied by the self, he is called of steady wisdom. Unshaken by adversity and freed from desire for pleasures, free from passion, fear, and anger, steady in thought such as a sage. Without attachment on all sides in the pleasant or unpleasant, not rejoicing or disliking, his wisdom is seen to stand firm. And when he withdraws completely the senses from the sense objects, as the tortoise draws in its limbs, his wisdom is established firm. Sense objects turn away from the abstinent, but the taste for them remains, but that too turns away from him who has seen the supreme. Know this indeed, son of Kunti, the turbulent senses carry away forcibly the mind of even the striving man of wisdom. Restraining all senses, he should sit disciplined, intent on me. He whose senses are thus controlled, his wisdom stands steadfast and firm. Dwelling on objects of senses engenders attachment to them. From attachment, desire is born, and from desire, anger is born. From anger rises delusion, from delusion, loss of memory, from loss of memory, destruction of intelligence, all is lost. Desire and loathing banishing, moving amongst objects of sense, by self-restraint, the self-controlled thus attains to tranquility. In tranquility all sorrows cease to arise for him indeed, for the tranquil-minded at once the intellect becomes steady. For the undisciplined there is no wisdom, no meditation. For him who does not meditate there is no peace or happiness. When the mind is guided by the wandering senses, it carries away the understanding as the wind a ship on the waters. The wisdom of him whose senses are withdrawn from objects of sense on all sides, O mighty armed one, will be found firmly established. The man of restraint is awake in what is night for all beings. That in which all beings awake is night for the wise one who sees. As the ocean becoming full yet remains unmoving and still, he in whom all desires enter and yet remains unmoved has peace. He who abandons all desires attains peace, acts free from longing, indifferent to possessions, and free from all egotism. This is the divine state. Having attained this, he's not deluded. Fixed in it at the time of death, he attains Brahma Nirvana. Om Tat Sat. Thus in the Upanishads of the glorious Bhagavad Gita, the science of the eternal, the scripture of yoga, the dialogue between Sri Krishna and Arjuna, ends the second discourse entitled Sankhya Yoga.